Welcome to another episode of It's a Long Beach Thing, where we bring on guests and we talk about this beautiful city we call Long Beach. And now here's your host, motivational coach, Paul Fortune. Welcome to another episode of It's a Long Beach Thing. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and like us on Facebook on It's a Long Beach Thing. We have a great show for you today. We have somebody that probably loves Long Beach more than I do, owner of the LB908, John Grossi. John, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
No problem, John. So, I'm a big fan of your Instagram. Matter of fact, the March Madness of the restaurant bars was really, really cool. So I'm thinking, I have to reach out to this guy. This guy loves Long Beach. And then your It's a Long Beach Thing that you did. It's a Long Beach Thing. We're from Long Beach post you did. That got a lot of waves. So I'm thinking, okay, I gotta get to know this John guy.
Yeah, thanks. Is that how you first, did you just recently hear about us?
I've heard about you for a while. I've heard about the LB908 for a while, but I've seen your stuff. But you know what? I didn't put two and two together until you did the March Madness. I'm like, okay, John is the same guy that owns the LB908. Now it all comes together for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you like it. Yeah, we try to be funny and try to be unique on Instagram for sure.
Absolutely. Real quick question before we really dive in. I had a friend of mine, Matt, he had a question and I had the same question is, how did you come up with the seating for it?
The seating, it was in that video. So I don't know if people, watched the whole thing. Obviously it's Instagram, but it was about a minute video. And we said, like, and comment your favorite bars below. All seating was based off of, and we said all seating will be based off of that. So it took like 5 hours, which is always a grueling task. And then just immediately people start ripping me to shreds. But it was all completely based on our followers, how many people liked it. We have a whole Excel sheet of just my fiance and I went through and she would read, like, she'd say Reno Room, one vote, five likes. And I'd mark it down, Gallagher's, three votes, whatever. So it was just completely up to how many people nominated. We said you had 24 hours to nominate. And then, of course, plenty of people don't nominate anyone. But then the minute you put out the seating, they complain. But you're just like, that's how it goes.
You can't complain if you didn't vote, right?
Well, you know what? It annoys me because of how much work, like, we try to do to be fair. But on the flip side of that is, because, like, once you, like, realize that there's always going to be all these haters, they kind of, like, check you. Like, they're kind of the reason why we do it so, like, by the book and, like, fair. Like, I think, like, 8 years ago, I would have just been, whatever. Like, I think this bar is better, so they're a one seed. But now we just know, like, people are going to check you. So you have to have something to say, this is what we did, this is why we did it. So it's probably a good thing.
Awesome. Well, that's good. I mean, it's a learning curve. I know you've been doing it for a while. So, but let's dive in, shall we?
Sure. Yeah.
So what's your association with this great city of Long Beach?
I've lived here pretty much my whole life. So, it's my home. That's is the easy way to put it. My family moved here from San Pedro when I was seven. So I always like to say that because people always, it's such a thing if you're a lifer or not. So no, I did not spend my first 6 years here, but went to elementary school, middle school, high school, college, and here I am. I grew up in Los Altos. When I moved out and lived with some friends, it was about 3 minutes away from my parents' house, and now I live in a condo about 2 minutes away from both of those houses. So I haven't strayed too far.
Right on. So what, and San Pedro, as everybody knows, it's just over the bridge, not that far away. So I could still consider yourself a local. 7 years old, I think that you can claim Long Beach now.
I'm clearly trying so hard to be able to earn that potential.
So what high school did you go to?
I went to Wilson.
Okay. And how was that experience there?
It was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. I mean, like, I was always a good student, and had a great time. I was involved in a lot of stuff, so it's funny, like some people that knew me in high school, they're like, somehow we knew what you're doing now is exactly what you'd be doing, because I was like the rally chair in high school, where I was like the guy on stage promoting every like event. And then, but yeah, I loved high school, played basketball and baseball, and it was great. Loved it. Love Wilson.
So your coach was Annie Hall at Wilson?
Yeah.
Okay. He was my coach, but I went to St. Anthony's
Oh, nice.
years earlier. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And in
Cool.
fact, we're finally going to go ahead and do an article talking about all his success in our upcoming magazine, where we just got started working on that.
Right on. He just hit and it might have been your magazine. You promoted that he hits 600 wins.
Yeah, 600 wins. I don't think you saw it, because we didn't say that yet, but like, that's what we're kind of doing, an article about, just like, over the course of his career, how successful he's been.
Right on, right on.
Now,
So,
before anyone starts asking me more questions, I played, I think, 1 or 2 years of baseball, and then I quit. I was not like Mr. I think they won the national championship when I was there, and I'd get zero credit for that.
you
But
were on the 2017?
that's when I was a freshman. Yeah, actually, my brother was on that team. Yeah.
Oh, right on, right on. Oh, that yeah, I know a lot of people from that team. You talk about Los Altos. Tanner Perkins was, I believe, on that team.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you
Yeah.
know Tanner?
Just through being in Los Altos, being at not, before it was Kennedy's. What was the place before Kennedy's?
DJ Malloy's,
DJ
yeah.
Malloy's. That's where I met him at. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome guy. Yeah, I know Tanner very well.
Oh, right on, right on. So if I got your profile correct, you had a stint after you graduated high school at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, for 1 year, I went to Pittsburgh, and it's funny. So obviously, I own Long Beach 908 magazine, which I started. It's a print magazine, so a lot of people know me from that, and then a whole different crowd knows me from Instagram, and then some people realize that it's both. Maybe you just made that connection as well. But I went to Pittsburgh for 1 year, but I had actually started a magazine the summer after high school, and I got my first taste of entrepreneurship, and I did a second magazine from my dorm room in Pittsburgh, and I was like, that's it, I want to move back. And at the time, I wanted to drop out of college and start my own business. I did end up going to I transferred to LBCC, and then I ended up going to Long Beach State. But yeah, for 1 year, I was in Pittsburgh.
So tell me about that. I mean, that's a specific dream to get into that type of work. And then at that time, when you're starting a magazine, I would imagine it was both print and online at the same time, or started that way. Probably a lot of your professors are saying, "Oh, this medium is dead. This meet tr try to find another career." And here you are going, "No, I'm going head first into it, and we're gonna make it work." So talk a little bit about that, because there had been a lot of gumption at you as a young man. I know you're still young, but at that point in your life, going, I'm going for this entrepreneurship. I this is a passion.
Yeah, you're spot on with every single person telling me it was a bad idea. I mean, just like overkill of like how annoying it was that anyone who supposedly I should be looking up to was telling me not to do this. And but people who love you or want to see you succeed, and like, hey, like that's stupid. And there's no right or wrong, but like I knew kind of I'd done a project with a magazine, and I really liked it, and I never even thought that's what I'd be doing. I don't think I knew at that point I'd be doing this 10 years, 12 years later. But it was sort of just like, it's awesome. And I could tell I was already learning so much more about owning a business. And that's like my core thing before I did the magazine. It's not like I wanted to own a magazine. It was more so I always knew I wanted to own my own business. That was it. So I was learning so much about that. And through my magazine, as when I was in college, I was interviewing business owners. And I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, I have a firsthand interview with all these different business owners of every industry. And I was like, one day I'll use all this information and choose what I want to become, like something like them. And then I just obviously it never stopped. And I finally really just became in love with the idea of being a publisher and doing this magazine. But I do think we had some benefits. I always say we, because I always have people helping me here and there, whatever. But some benefits of like at the time when I started it was truly right when every print medium was dying, like in the news. It was like this place went out of business, this went out of business, this went out of business. So like for one, I was like the only one starting one. I mean, now people have started more little local magazines and stuff like that. And I think there's a huge investment. I think the Yellow Pages is like a they have all these like franchises of magazines that they've started in the last 8 or 9 years or something like that. And it's kind of proven that it's still there. But at the time it was just everyone was it was stopping. And I do think I had some advantages. One, I was young. I grew up with the internet, so I kind of understood that like the long form stuff wasn't going to work as well anymore. And we do a lot of long form now, like for these days, we do write pretty long articles, but like considering how print had just been around for such a long time, and I kind of understood, I was like, well, people just want to see pictures. They just want to see little captions. And I kind of, there were some little things I knew like that. And then I also just had the advantage of being very young where profit didn't matter. Like in Pittsburgh, so like in Pittsburgh, I worked my ass off at a cafe to like, make money. And I worked so many hours while I was there for that 1 year. And I made like $2,000 or something, and I'm sure, Pittsburgh minimum wage was behind California and it's definitely way different than it is now. But like, and then I was like, I did a magazine and I made like $2,500 and it was a lot easier actually. So I was just like, this is like, I was living at home when once I moved home, I lived at home and it was just like I was able to sort of figure a lot of stuff out without it, like profit wasn't really a big deal. I was just going to college at the time, so.
So talk to us a little bit about that, because obviously, when you people talk about magazine and things have changed and evolved, how are you making money, especially in the more or in the early ages? I'm sure it's still similar today, probably at a bigger scale, but how were you making money in the beginning? Were you selling advertising or what
So
was going on?
it's all advertising, and my pitch was pretty similar to what it is now, is we're very local. Like we started in East Long Beach, that's still where we are, and we distribute to these three or four zip codes. And the reason we distribute to those zip codes is because it's literally a circle around my parents' house where I grew up. Like it's just where I know. That's because I always have people like, why don't you go here? Why don't you go here? I'm just like, I feel like I really know this area because I live in the center of it. And my whole life I've lived in the center of it. So that's just what I know. And that's local. And I did something that was a lot different from what was going on at the time. I gotta think I was one of the first magazines to do glossy, nice paper for free. Because again, this was the time when all the subscription stuff was dying. Like people were really like, I think there was a Long Beach magazine that was a subscription thing that died maybe a year after I started. And there was all sorts of subscription-based stuff, or there were the mailers that were like, basically newspaper copy, very throwaway. And what we did was try to put a really high quality product as far as paper goes on your doorstep, filled with people in the local community. Anyone who knows Long Beach knows how much everyone knows each other. And that was kind of the initial pitch is people are going to get a high quality glossy magazine on the porch and they're probably going to know someone in it. They're probably not going to throw it away. And so if you want your advertisement in there, and by the way, very, very, very reasonable pricing. Again, I was 19 years old, didn't really care. Just wanted to make, not lose money. But so that was the pitch, and probably hardest part, or what, like, I guess would is the reason I had success, is that I just actually went door to door. Like, again, something people don't do anymore, but just, I mean, went door to door and tried to sell it. And I had two friends with me one summer, another friend with me another summer. It was just like, it was like a college project kind of. We had fun. We were just, three guys going around. We'd get rejected and make jokes about it. And, but at the same time, there was a drive to obviously try to, it was just this little project that we wanted to make ends meet. So, and that's, it's exactly what I still do, but on a bigger scale for sure.
I was going to ask you how you did that, if it was door sales, and I've done a little bit of that in the past as well. And if anybody's done that, it is not an easy thing to do, because there's it's rejection after rejection. So it's cool that you had friends of yours that were with you, so you could laugh it off and joke around about it. But it's definitely. You definitely need it definitely builds your thick skin. After a while, you don't get reject you don't feel the same way the first few times, definitely. But if you do it enough, I'm sure you start to get used to the flow of it. So with these friends of yours, I thought that's pretty cool. Did you give them any incentives to work with you, or were they partners with you, or how did that all work?
Yeah, I mean, so again, it like that was like the first summer, second summer, and yeah, I think we just all split the money. Like, it was definitely my thing that I was doing, but it was like, hey, do you want to, again, I don't know, it was like a project. It like, if we did it for a few summers and put it on a resume, that's, and again, that's kind of what I was telling my parents anyway, or we were telling our parents, because they would have never said, yeah, you should start a magazine right now. But it was a really impressive side. Like, who else is doing that in college? Like, it was like an impressive extracurricular, I guess, at the time. So it wasn't like, it wasn't until like this maybe summer before my senior year of college, so maybe 3 or 4 years in, when it was like, that's when I realized, okay, if I want to keep doing this, I got to prove that this is sustainable, just to my parents, who are not going to let their son, who's always been a very good student and very successful, like, just ruin his life by not getting a good job. So I had to at least show, like, hey, this is it. Like, that was when I took the jump to, like, this could be serious. Here, I'm at least making some money that I can live on. I'm not, but those first few summers, yeah, we did it with friends. Again, plenty of my friends didn't even have jobs. Some did. We split whatever money we had, laughed everything off, drank Coors Light at the end of the day. It was, yeah, so.
It takes drive to do that, especially at that young of an age. Where did that drive come from? To wanting to be an entrepreneur. Being an entrepreneur is not, it's easy to say that, and a lot of people kind of fantasize about it, but to actually take action and be an entrepreneur is a whole different animal. It is rejection after rejection, going forward, failure after failure, learning from it. Where did that drive come from at such an early age that this was something that you really, really were passionate about?
So I grew up, like, both my uncles owned businesses. My dad was the general manager of one of those businesses, and I kind of like grew up just in a small business family. So for one, I just, that was something I cared about, and I do think that helps. Like, my, just like, for example, my dad, I mean, still to this day, but especially the first 10 years of the business, I mean, he just knew all the little things that you have to do, as far as, like, not even the obstacles you would think about with the magazine, but just like accounting or the taxes, or like call lines you have to wait on to talk to someone who can help you through some random thing the government sends you that you have to do that you would never think about. Like, there's so much stuff that like is just not about a magazine that like, I don't know how, like, I truly don't know how you would understand that if it, like, I don't really understand it. I kind of do now, but my dad kind of knew what to do. He's like, well, you're gonna have to do this. Like, and the easy example is like filing a DBA. At this point, I feel like people learn that because they Google how to start a business or whatever. But like that sort of stuff never stops, which is kind of crazy. So I do think having a family member who had been there and done that was very helpful. But as far as the drive, I just feel like I've always been driven, and I've always been especially driven to do. I'm less driven if someone tells me to do something, and I'm incredibly driven if I'm telling myself to do it. And that's just kind of how I've been, how I am, and I think I always just again, I was always at the top of my class for pretty much everything academic wise, and I feel like with that, sometimes I think it's a curse. With that is like the conversation and you know among those like top classes are usually like help, like you want to do something impactful. Sometimes I wish that I was like, you know, wanted to make money, but that was never the conversation growing up. It was just like, I don't know, I always wanted to have an impact, that for sure. So.
Okay, so you're in this situation where you're starting to get a little bit of success, but you're at the point where you really got to step it up if this is going to be sustainable to make a living on. So what were the changes that you made? And I'm assuming at this point you're still a solo entrepreneur at this point. It's your sole company. Nobody's working underneath you. It's just you. What was the transition made for that?
I mean, just more sales. That's pretty much what it comes. I don't know. That's like the simplified version, but just writing a number that increases every quarter of what I wanted to make. And again, it's, you know, when people were telling me not to be in print, part of what they're saying is it's not like the most lucrative, like, you know, like business of all time.
Yeah.
The longer I stay in it, the more I think it, like, as you said, as an entrepreneur, you keep learning and growing. Like, it could be, I think anything could be if you know what you're doing. And so I've certainly started to make improvements. But I think at that very beginning stage, it was just a matter of pretty simple. I knew my costs. I knew it was just more sales. And I do think, a fun part of that, or something that I really enjoy, is that I'm not just selling something, I'm selling a product that I'm also creating. So like there, I do like a lot of emails to just try to sell advertisement. I talk to people to try to sell advertisement, but at the same time, the other half is I can keep creating a product that people are going to like more and more. And I think I just saw that starting to happen, and I was really able to like to realize I gained confidence knowing that people were starting to know the magazine and like it. We've always gone out and taken pictures in the community. And I think also around that time is when people started to be like, oh, it's LB908. And that's the coolest thing of all time to hear when you created that. And so that's kind of like I was able to keep realizing that I need to keep making the magazine better and keep doing sales. But I don't really know, just working harder and smarter. There wasn't really anything I did differently, other than I think around that time is when I started to realize I needed to write the number on the board and make sure I was hitting these quotas, and still what I do to this day, and they're always super achievable incremental increases, and that's what I still try to do.
I'm really fascinated with sales. So was there part of your formula, was it increasing of the sales calls per day at that point?
So nothing was like, so like my brother's in sales for tech, and like I kind of have learned that like the whole sales process, or I like just through talking to him, and I'm so different. Like, I don't know. It's just like so much. No, there wasn't a quota of sales calls per day, and I would assume I was, if I'm remembering correctly, I was going out again, going to more places. But also just, I think it was just kind of growing naturally. And then when I stopped college, when I graduated, I mean, I was a full-time student, so that does take a ton of time off your hands. It just has to. And So I just was spending more time and doing everything I'd already been doing, but it was something I really cared about. And yeah, I'm sure I was going to more places in person. I'm sure I was sending more emails. I'm sure the magazine got a lot better once I had more time to spend just grading it. So I can't say that there was like a technique that I remember for sure.
Got it. Okay. And so through that process, being an entrepreneur, we all have good days and we have bad days, right? So on those bad days, what kept you through? It was just that passion, because I'm sure there was days where you're like, man, you probably see some other people that graduated, doing W-2 job, and you probably at that point might be probably making more money than you, and you're maybe thought, oh man, am I doing anything? Was there any doubts, or did any of that creep in during your journey?
No, I'm invincible. No, I'm just kidding.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it still creeps in every single day. I mean, this that hasn't gone away. I think again, I think there's something like I don't think I'm a good sales guy because I can because I make what I'm selling. And so I think I don't know that I'd be a great salesperson for someone else's product, but I think what keeps me going is that I do truly feel that I'm making an impact, and I'm in a I'm lucky that this local magazine, like I get so much positive feedback all the time. It's like it's awesome because I also, like you said, there's all those things that I see people that are definitely making way more money than me, but like, and that was back then, that's still now, and it but it's just like I do feel that I'm doing something that is positive and makes an impact. So I think on the day this, on the day you get rejected or lose an advertiser or something like that, at least there's that. At least it's like, and I'm doing and I'm doing fine. So it's like not like I'm like worried. So I'm comfortable and I make an impact, and I think that means a lot to me personally. So I think that's what I fall back on. But, yeah, I don't. There's just tough days, but everyone has tough days. I don't
Yeah,
know.
no, most definitely. Everybody does have tough days. So when did you start to feel like, okay, I'm in a flow. This is good. This is sustainable. Because I mean, when you're starting out and you're like, okay, I got to step it up, but you got to do it, right? And then you hit another level going, okay, all right, now I have some advertisers. I have repeat advertisement. They're sticking with me. I'm making good income. When did that start to play? How long did it take to get to that kind of level?
Probably I just don't know, but probably like 5 or 6 years in, I'm probably making that up. But I do know a turning point for me was okay. So I even when I was creating a little, it started as a 16-page magazine, and then it was a 24, then a 36, or whatever it was. Even on those little magazines that were smaller and looked way worse than they do today. My deadlines were outrageously stressful. And I mean, deadlines are deadlines. They're always a big thing. But the reason they're so stressful is because money comes in last minute, and that is something that will probably be something I'm perpetually trying to fix. But like that, if you give people 3 weeks, that's they're not gonna tell you till 4 weeks. Later that they want to advertise or something like that. So I guess it was so stressful because I didn't want to make more content till I had the money. And once I realized just through doing it and seeing the numbers continue to go up, there was a turning point when I realized like this is a trend now. I keep getting the sales, so I can start planning content ahead of time. And that was a huge moment for me because and little moments like that along the same lines have happened a few times over the years, but it's like, okay, n now I know I'm gonna have the money to do a 68-page magazine every time. If it's crazy, maybe I'll go bigger than that, but I don't even really want to go bigger than that at this point. So that's kind of like a I'm rolling feeling for me is like, it's crazy because I'm not like, I don't have a lot of people on contract. I'm not big on contract. So it is just this crazy, like, I know that at any point, any every advertiser could drop out, but like it doesn't happen for whatever reason. But an advertiser or two does drop out every time, but they're always replaced by three more. Like I don't even understand, but that's just how it works. It's just like the trend has proven itself.
The
So
rule of three, huh?
yeah. So I would say that would be like my I'm rolling feeling good point is like planning out the content ahead of time, and that's kind of gotten on steroids at, over the last like 2 or 3 years of just like, wow, we are rolling pretty well. I mean, we're already working on content like 6 months in advance on some stuff. So
So then at that point, you're probably thinking of scaling. So when did you hire your first, well, first off, I believe you have people that work for you now, right?
I do. I would say about 5 or 6 years in, it was actually going really well. I definitely got a little too big for my britches. That was a big learning curve, and I actually hired multiple people on staff, and that was something that I could not sustain and had to lay off. So that was a hurdle for me. I've then since rebuilt, and I learned a lot about having employees, and I now am running much leaner, but I do have our editor Kathleen is like my right-hand woman, and she does a ton, and she I have no full-time employees, but she's very close, and or she works a lot, and I now have a photographer and quite a few contributors that are all independent contractors. So,
So where do you see the vision of your magazine going forward?
I mean, you use the word scaling, and that's 100%, I think, probably what every business owner is constantly thinking about. I think for me, is that over the last few years, a lot of your questions were about my early part, and you're like, what was your sales quota? What was all this? And I was just like, I don't know. I just kept working hard at everything. Once I got to that point of like realizing not just that I was rolling with a 32 page magazine, but that I was rolling with a 68 page magazine. We have 5 issues a year. We have online content. Like now that we've gotten to the point we're at now, I'm obsessed with trying to create the processes to just scale everything, and I'm in the middle of that right now. And by middle of that, I mean I'm a few years in, but I just as far as being able to hire employees that do a certain thing, know their job, know their incentive, there's growth definitely within Long Beach. There's potential growth other places. So I kind of now have learned, at least for the way I want to work, is that I really want to have this machine in place that knows what everyone's task is and knows exactly how our publishing works. And I think it's a very niche field, but that's sort of what I'm working on right now. I hope that answers your question.
It does. I know that it's LB 908, and 908 is all the zip codes of the Long Beach area. Was it, and you said you started and it was just basically a circle around the home that you grew up in. So did you change that name when you start to scale a little bit? Because I assume now you are Long Beach. You aren't just Los Altos. You are encompassing the whole city of Long Beach.
Yeah, so you kind of nailed it. That's where we want to go. So we started with 16,000 homes, circle around my house. The circle's still around my parents' house, but it's bigger. It's 25,000. Sometimes we do 30,000. 908 is purposely all of Long Beach, like you said. I didn't start East Long Beach Magazine. That name obviously could have been available. Something that hinders me, but is also a reason I'm so obsessed with trying to create these processes that will help me on this, is I do truly believe in the local aspect. Like I said, like there are so many. Long Beach is huge, and I don't know, like my life just isn't the way that some people like in other parts of Long Beach, they go to different businesses. They interact at different parks. They, you know what I mean? Like, the people that get our magazine, I can, within 30 seconds get in a conversation that, oh, you went to this school, or oh, you played Little League there, or oh, you did this. I can't get in that conversation just because of my who I am, with people in other parts of Long Beach. And so I think I'm obsessed with creating a process where, despite me not knowing that, we can still get truly local information, if that, and whether, whether that's through people submitting it or through being at a point where we can hire an expert that did grow up in that neighborhood or lives in that neighborhood. There's a few different ways we can do that, but I've lived in Long Beach my whole life. I know less than five people who live in a downtown high-rise condo, but there's a ton of them. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know those, like, 30 minutes that way. Like, it's the same as going to Cyprus for me. I know just a few people live in Cyprus. Like, so that's kind of the task. And like I said, it's kind of my self-imposed, like, I want to be realistic. I think 908 is very realistic to what we do right now, and very hopefully hits home. And so I think scaling is all about making sure that the publishing process is in a place where we can eventually be truly local, but keeps broadening that coverage.
You said your reach is between 25 to 30,000. Does that mean, is that a paid subscription then, or what do you
No,
mean
it's free.
by
Our magazine is free. We go to guarantee 25,000 homes.
that?
That's what we tell our advertisers. Quite often we'll go to more just because I want to do that, but that's what we currently promise.
So and so I'm sure in the beginning you may still do this. So are you going? Are you like the paper boy, and you're dropping this magazine off there?
Yeah, I am. It's too much for one person to do, but I drive around the crew. I've done that for, it's all high school kids that deliver it. It started with my friends started delivering it for me when I was in college. And then it was a lot of my friends' little siblings that helped me out. And then it just slowly became like, a high school job. I don't know where they come from now, but they call me and say they want a job. And it's kind of just nicely transitioned for over a decade now. And I still drive them around, drop them on every single street. They deliver every house. I, of course, do and have done thousands on my own over the years. I enjoy it. I'll put in AirPods and just go walk them to a neighborhood. That's another thing we're actually very, very serious. One of the next parts of the process is kind of getting away from that. We'll either be mailing or hiring distributors for some of the issues this year, just because that has become another thing that kind of hinders growth. It takes a ton of time. I mean, I don't like, you never know what a number sounds like to people, but if you were part of a crew and saw us deliver 1,000 magazines, you would be like, holy crap, 25,000 is so much coverage. And like, we go to, it's just when you see it in person, you're like, wow, we go to so many homes. It's crazy. And yeah, we do hand deliver those to the doorstep of every house. So.
So 1,000 homes, how long does that take a high school person or yourself to do 1,000 homes?
It's typically like 1 hour is 100 homes, so 10 hours would be 1,000 homes.
Jeez. So that's a lot of manpower.
Lot of manpower, yeah. And then, unfortunately, it's just like kind of impossible to necessarily trust a high school kid to do it. So I'm there with them. Like, I oversee the entire thing. It's usually me and about six kids. I drop them off on the street one at a time. They do the street, and then I take them to the next street. I'm driving up and down, making sure they get every house. It's a sensitive thing, especially I think, in recent years since I've started the magazine, people don't love people walking around their neighborhood. Luckily, again, people know the LB 908 now, but still, and back when I started it, like I said, it was my friends or family friends, siblings of my friends. Now it's just, again, I like my distributors, but I don't know them. I talk to their parent before they start working every time, but So, I have to be there and make sure everything's going well.
Yeah, especially high school people, they're not the most, they could be the greatest people in the world, but a lot of times, sometimes responsibility might not be the top thing on their mind. So that is something that you have to be on top of, and that's a lot of that's a lot of time out of your day on something you probably could do, that's taking you away from doing stuff from your magazine that you have to do during doing something like that. Just, kind of babysitting. I mean, that's basically what you're kind of doing.
That's right. So yeah, that's been a big, but I mean the cost difference is incredible, which is why it's taken so long. But we are getting to a point where like, yes, this needs to happen because, Kathleen's kind of, like I said, she's our editor and I meet with her every week, and it's kind of becoming clear that growth is possible if I have more time, which that is one of my biggest time suckers for sure.
So if you hire a distributor, how much more reach could you get?
That's a different question. The reach, I mean, the reach is just more money. It's not necessarily like, I'm having trouble answering that question. It's like, it's if I had a distributor doing what we're doing right now, then we would be able to start putting processes to potentially do more neighborhoods with the magazine, but it's not like a direct thing.
Oh, I'm just saying, like, you can do 25 to 30 right now with you and your high school crew. If you hired a distributor to do it, how many more houses could they hit for you?
Well, unlimited. I mean, they could hit unlimited, but it's just like the printing costs would go up and the distribution costs would go up.
Got it.
So it would be a slow incremental thing. But it would allow that to start to happen. Like, again, people and where we go, they know us, but it would allow me to maybe have time to introduce myself to some of the new neighborhoods, to create more online content for various parts of Long Beach. And to kind of slowly grow where that would make sense money wise. But time is not like the factor why we don't go to more homes. The cost of paper and the cost of distribution is.
Got it. Got it. Okay, cool. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time. Before I end it, is there anything that any projects or anything that you're working on that you would like to promote?
Just I always have trouble answering this because, as you know, I like there are a million things I'm working on, but I would just encourage people to follow us at LB908 on Instagram. And that would just be anything we're doing is going to kind of at some point cycle through there.
And I got to contest to it. If you follow LB908 on Instagram, you'll be highly entertained. You put out some excellent content. I mean, I thought that was brilliant idea with the March Madness restaurant 64. I thought that was a great idea. Was this the first year you did this, or have you is this
No.
a new thing for you?
We did it we started it in 2020 during COVID. So I'm just a huge basketball fan, to be honest. And that March Madness was gone that year, and because of COVID. And we had also just for the first time done like our entire theme of our print magazine was about restaurants. And pretty much the day it printed, every restaurant had to close for business. So our magazine was useless, and which sucked. And most of the people that advertised in it were restaurants, and they couldn't make money. But here I had all this content from restaurants, and March Madness was gone, and everyone was just sitting around. So we started March Restaurant Madness, and it was just again a COVID thing. Like everyone was doing weird stuff. But it really was popular. People loved it. And so we did it for 3 more years. And this was the first year we mixed it up to be bars instead of restaurants, just because it had gotten kind of stagnant as far as, unfortunately, statistically, people just I can pretty confidently say that they have the 16 same restaurants will be in the Sweet 16. There's like the first year, again, because the seeding wasn't really based off anything, but like, maybe nominations or whatever. So upsets are way more fun to watch and people get behind them. And then we started doing the seeding based on last year's tournament, which was incredibly accurate. And just each year there's less and less upsets. So this year we started Bar Madness, and I don't know, we'll either do that again or do something else next year. But this was our fourth year of a March Madness tournament.
Well, speaking of Instagram, you made a post about Bamboo Club, which I live right by there, and I knew when it was Liquid Lounge. I know it was Tidal Bay or something in between then. But you made a post about that, and I was amazed because that bar is, I think you even mentioned it, 5 years old, and that made it to the finals. I was impressed that Bamboo made it to the final. I mean, JoJo's, I mean, come on. I mean, that's the staple. So them winning, that doesn't surprise me at all. But the fact that you had Bamboo Club making it all the way to the end, I thought was quite impressive because there's all kinds of famous bars in Long Beach, as you know, and they upset quite a few of them.
I was honestly shocked, and I've told them this because like the years you've been around is such a factor, because like it's just an Instagram thing, and you don't necessarily have people that even go to bars voting. You might have a lot of people that went, I mean, maybe they'll go to a bar here and there, but maybe people in their 50s or 60s that went to bars years ago. And so like what we saw with the restaurants is, of course, a lot of the places that have been around 30 plus years are the ones who did well. And like Bamboo Club, just, I mean, that name is 5 years old. It wasn't even like they had new owners or like, because we've seen some restaurants who had new owners, but the name had been there a long time. I was shocked, but that's kind of what made it fun. It was like I went into the tournament truly not knowing who was going to win. Joe Jost has been in our Restaurant Madness competition every year, and they've always done well, but they've never won. I thought they would maybe be a favorite, but they also don't try to get out the vote because they don't care, because they're Joe Jost. So like there is some factor of like you can play hard to win and share it and get people to vote. And Bamboo Club did really well. I was shocked. And that's what I like. We're gonna do some content with JoJo's. They're gonna get an article in our next magazine. We always give the winner something. Second place, I've never really given anything to, but that's why we did that video for them, because I was just like, this is a real, you can't really fake this, because so many people are voting that like, I don't know. It's not like you can vote multiple times or anything. You just vote once, and they really did well. So.
Yeah. So I like to end it on a fun question. I know you have, well, I'm sure you have quite a few selections on this, but where do you like to go eat in Long Beach?
So yeah, you prepped me for that, and I would say I'm gonna give you a long answer if that's okay, because
That's
one of my
fine.
favorite things about Long Beach is that it is such a big city that it can, whatever personality you have or phase of life you're in, there's a part of Long Beach for that. So right now I'd say my two favorites in Long Beach are probably both in Naples, Michael's and Nico's. And probably because I'm engaged, I'm about to get married, we don't go out to eat much. When we do, we want it to be a nice date night. But we're also saving up, so I don't even go out to eat that much this year, the last 2 years. You asked me 6 years ago, it's EJ Malloy's or Avenue Three Pizza or Glory Day, somewhere where I could just, chug schooners of beers with my friends. And so I think that's like, that's those are definitely our go-tos right now. But I definitely think, the phase of life is something I've really appreciated about Long Beach, is like whatever you're in, whatever you're into, that they have something for it.
Right on. John, it's been a pleasure talking to you about Long Beach and learning your journey and how impressive you are. I had no idea about your backstory at all and what you're all about, but I really, really admire your grit and your passion for Long Beach and being an entrepreneur.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for building me up and making me feel good.
No problem. It's been a Long Beach thing.